Walter Williams was asked, if you were to find your political / economic philosophy in a paragraph, what would it be?
That's pretty challenging. I would say that my political philosophy is very, very much like my economic philosophy. It's laissez-faire. That is, people have the right to do whatever they wish so long as they don't violate the property rights of others. And my thinking about many, many issues, my initial premise that I make is that I own Walter Williams. I am the property of Walter Williams. And so what that means when you start off with the idea of self-ownership, well, then there are certain things that are clearly immoral. And the reason why they're immoral, because they violate private property. That is, the reason why murder is immoral is because it violates private property. Rape is immoral. It violates private property. Theft is immoral. It violates private property. And many Americans can go along with this, but I say something else violates private property that many Americans would not agree with me. That is, I think that the forcible use of one person to serve the purposes of another, it violates private property. Because keep in mind, a working definition of slavery is, in fact, the forcible use of one person to serve the purposes of another. And if you look at the government spending in our country, that Americans are being forcibly used to serve the purpose of another. That is, your money is being taken by, you know, under intimidation, threats, and coercion to serve the purposes of some other American. I think that's immoral.
Welcome back to the Ramble Room, everybody. Again, that was a clip from Walter Williams. He is no longer with us, so he is not our guest today, but we do have the usual troops, Ken, Joseph, Diane, and myself, Sarah. And Ken has a little treat for us today. Back to you, Ken.
Easy, Joseph. It's a little treat.
Oh.
You're panting.
I love treats.
I did hear salivating. There is a principle that we've been talking about over the last few shows, and it has to do with liberty comes responsibility. If you are going to be free, then you have to be responsible for yourself. And in addition to that, if you cede that responsibility to some other person or entity of any kind, then with that goes some of your liberty. Because now that person is responsible for your actions and therefore has an input, has a right to influence those things. This is an important thing today, and we'll understand why in light of this Medicaid expansion, but we'll get there presently. There is a legal term called the assumption of risk. And what that's about is if you want to go do something that might be deemed as risky, and you know full well that it might be risky before you participate, you don't have a right to go sue somebody. In today's world, people engage in fun and exciting activities, which by their very nature are risky, with the possibility of being injured. Water skiing, rock climbing, watching a baseball game, going to the rifle range with Joseph. These are all examples of activities that people happily take part in.
Yay, I made the list.
Everybody's got to be notorious for something. Assumption of risk is a legal theory that means once a person has knowingly and voluntarily engaged in risky activity, he cannot sue the host for injuries or damages incurred.
People nowadays, these communist socialist
snowflakes,
and just the average American, I mean, it doesn't have to be a liberal or a communist or a socialist. They think that the job of the government is to take care of you in some way.
Yeah, every time there's any kind of an ill in society, well, the government has to fix it.
Right, right. And what people don't realize is that every time you want the government to take care of you, they're going to come in and they're going to take rights away from you so that they can take care of you. Whether it's the money that he's talking about, whether it's taking your money and turning you into a slave, essentially, and spending it on somebody else, or whether it's your freedom of speech. I mean, if we look at today's society, we want the government to keep us safe from hate speech. I don't know who defines hate speech.
Or misinformation.
Misinformation. Keep us safe. Keep it safe. Well, you're violating somebody else's rights to their freedom of speech by saying, we don't want to hear from you. And we see what kind of problems that this causes. Let's look at the vaccine, where we had doctors coming out and saying, hey, this could be a problem. This hasn't been looked at very carefully. We don't know the long-term effects. Shoot, we don't even know the short-term effects of this. And now people are getting blood clots. One person has died so far that I know of. personally, I think you kind of owe us an apology. We're sorry for shutting down these doctors that were giving out good information, saying, hey, this is a risky business. But that's beside the point. I think everybody needs to be really careful on what they decide they want the government to rule over. Your rights are being taken away, and you're letting them do it. You're begging them to take away your rights.
My generation makes the assumption that everybody wants to be free. And we've talked about this before, not too long ago, that we don't necessarily think that's true anymore. That people seem to think that safety is more important than being free, and that is a very, very dangerous precipice. Once you start that slide, look at all the mandates that came down by decree from above about the risk. We should be able to assume a certain amount of risk and whether or not we wear a mask or not. If you're scared, stay away. That's the way it's always been handled in the past. But now, because we want, as you pointed out, we want the government to take care of us because they're responsible for us. If we get sick, they're the one that's going to have to pay for it. So we're going to trust them for everything. We're going to do whatever they tell us. And we really don't have any freedom or liberty left.
Well, and as far as free speech and misinformation goes, when we ask them to take care of that for us, we're also giving up a right to think.
Right.
We don't want to think anymore. Not only do we not ever want to get hurt physically or emotionally, but we don't want that hard work of coming up with our own answers.
We've said this many times on the show. The left is constantly doing things that they say that we are doing.
Yeah, they accuse us of precisely what they're doing.
Parler, they were saying, oh, we don't want these right-wing nut jobs living in an echo chamber. That's my best liberal voice. And on the other side of that, they're having everything shut down so that they can live in an echo chamber and not get the information that they want. And they're asking people to do that to them. They're asking people, please make us stupid like you.
Well, I have a right to live in an echo chamber if I want to.
Right. Yes, you do. You do. But you don't have the right to force everybody else to live in your echo chamber.
Right. You assume the risk of becoming an idiot.
I think I've also made this point on the show that it seems like every time something bad happens to somebody, there's this screeching group of Karens that stages some protest and says, we have to have a law to protect these people from this ever happening again. So one thing happens one time, and now we have to have a law that prevents that from ever happening again, which also shuts down all kinds of other freedoms for all kinds of other people.
Well, you wouldn't believe the trouble that we had when we wanted to do a playground at the school, finding a merry-go-round.
Yes.
Because merry-go-rounds, kids get hurt on them all the time.
That was the number one bestseller of the playground whenever I was growing up, the merry-go-round, because you could do all kinds of things on that. You could fling people off of it.
Which hurts them.
Yeah, hurt is good, people. You learn from hurt.
Broken bones.
Or each child has the right to look at the merry-go-round and make a benefit-to-risk assessment and say, you know what, I'm not very coordinated, I think I'll pass. Or the kids like me, who were very good at the merry-go-round, who said, get everybody get on and I'm going to spin you around. That I took that risk, and that was my choice as a small child. And I started learning that from a very young age, and now look at me. Never been hurt.
I knew a girl that hurt herself on the swing sets. She was swinging really high. She let go of the chain, and she's having a good time, and she falls off, and she breaks both of her arms. And it was awful because I was standing right in front of her, and I was very much in love with this girl. This
So you didn't actually do that to her.
Second, third grade. Not that anybody can verify. Anyways. But she breaks both of her arms. She's out of school for a while. She comes back. You know what she was on? The swing set. She was back up on the swing set. She was doing backflips and all kinds of stuff off of the thing because that's her right to do that.
And you got to get back up on the horse that threw you.
Right.
But that was 30 years ago. Now, if some little girl fell off the swing and broke both of her arms, her mom, Karen, would be in the school protesting against the swing sets and start some kind of tribe that all started a Facebook group and a GoFundMe page to get rid of all the swing sets in all the schools everywhere.
What they should have done is gotten rid of those hot slides.
Oh. The all metal slide was no good.
I was in grade school almost 50 years ago, few blocks from here, where what was then Linden School, and there's a big hill there. And at the bottom of the hill was a street. So we would all go sledding on the hill. That was the second most popular thing on the playground. You know what the most, well, it really wasn't on the playground, it was adjacent to it. You know what the most popular thing on the playground was?
An Iron Maiden?
Yes, we called her principal. No, seriously, the most popular thing on or near the playground was a row of Pfizer bushes.
Pfizer bushes?
Yeah, they're bushes that obscure the line of sight from the school.
Ah.
So mono was a big thing.
That's what the tires buried halfway in the ground were. Kids went under there to smooch it up.
The tires in the ground now are the government going, we got too many kids that are running out of underneath passing vehicles, therefore we need to do something. And there is there is something to be said for taking certain precautions and observing some rules, but you don't flat come out and say you can't do what you want to do. That's a violation of liberty.
The big problem is that people are asking for that. People are asking for their liberties to be taken. Demanding it. And they're demanding that it be taken away from other people, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to get hurt. Make that guy stop doing stuff that I don't want to do because I don't want him to be hurt or her to be hurt.
No child should ever be hurt again.
Yes, or adult for that matter. Adults can't even make their own decisions anymore.
But do you remember a few decades ago when the safety precaution of mothers was to wait until after a child got hurt and then say, careful.
That's not said.
Thanks, yeah. Mom.
When I was a kid, a seatbelt was Mom's arm.
And the dashboards were made of metal.
And my mother always said, dumbass.
But I think that we're right at the right age to have watched the progression of this, because I remember our grade school playground was asphalt. Mm-hmm. Which makes a lot of sense because I lived in Oregon.
Because if you fall on your ass, it's your fault.
That's not what I was going to say, but that's wonderful. It rained all the time there. So anything else would have been mud. Mm-hmm. And you can't plant grass because if, you know, dozens of kids are playing on it, you're going to have mud. So they made it out of asphalt. Well, some people fell off the monkey bars and broke their arms. And where I grew up, it was a logging community, and they had a lot of extra bark. So they built little squares around all the things and filled it in with bark, which is softer than asphalt. So then when you fell, you landed in there and you just had lots of slivers in you.
Yes.
But that was hey, we could make it a softer landing for these kids. And then that progressed as, you know, to where we got to where now it's this special rubbery stuff. So go ahead and fall because you couldn't possibly get hurt.
And then you have stupid kids doing stupider stuff.
Right. But even, you know, the bark wasn't the law. It was just somebody's great idea. We've got this extra stuff and we could make it better. Let's do that. And now you can't have a playground unless it conforms to all these things, all these rules about how to make sure no one ever gets hurt.
Well, this is not just on public playgrounds, though. This is in people's homes.
And your car.
You go to have a baby.
You have to wear a seatbelt.
There are companies whose sole purpose is baby-proofing your home. And they come put the straps on your toilets and the hooky thingies on all your cabinets and the plugs in all your outlets so that your baby is never, ever, ever harmed.
I'm sorry. I thought what they did was come in and proof your home so there wouldn't be any more babies.
That's a different procedure.
What a country.
This is an aspirin.
One of the things that we've done is we've forgotten that the world is a dangerous place. 100 years ago, people in Wyoming were fighting off bears and Indians and the weather and snakes and all these other things. And 200 years ago, 300 years ago, the same was true on the East Coast. But the more, quote-unquote, civilized we've become, the more we con ourselves into believing that the world is not as dangerous.
What that does is it's a false sense of security.
True.
Because what you've done is you've given the responsibility of your safety to somebody else that doesn't care about your safety.
They just want to control
you. Our government, I don't care what anybody says, they've done some pretty terrible things. Do you want those people to have complete control of your life?
It seems like things always happen just there's enough of them to remind me how easy we have it, but it occurs to me when you're talking about people 100 years ago that the houses that they lived in, and we're in one of them, when it gets windy out, it's colder in here because it's drafty. When they were sitting in their little sod houses and cabins and whatever it was, when it was windy out, you knew it because it was also windy in.
Right.
And we are outraged if the weather makes it into our house and changes the temperature now. So when we go out to start the car to get ready to go to work, you know, we put on our clothes and we run out there and turn on the heater and the defroster. And
no, we just push the little remote start button.
Okay, well, we could do that. I don't have one of those yet, so I can't speak to that. But then we run back in and wait for it to get warm. oh, that was so rough. The winters are so hard on me because I have to keep doing that. But back then, when you opened the door, you were in the weather and you had to go out and do your chores and all of those things, whether you wanted to or not. Whether you wanted to or not.
Because you were responsible for yourself. Another
yes.
thing that I would like to bring up is the idea that you always hear now when somebody's about ready to graduate high school this time of year, well, go get a job. Either go to college or go get a job. You go to college so you can get a better job. 100 years ago or more, that wasn't how we made a living. We learned a skill. We learned a trade. We went into business for ourselves. We were responsible for ourselves, and we handled those things. Now we have this job. We have all of this insurance. We have all things. And I'm not knocking insurance. That's one way that we take care of ourselves, is we put out a safety net. But if that insurance is not only mandatory, but it's only one provider, now we start to have a problem.
One thing on that is that 100 years ago was that you didn't wait till somebody was 18 to tell them to go get a job. They got a job as soon as they could ride a bike.
Yeah,
so they could learn a trade.
If they had
a
bike.
But little kids had little jobs delivering newspapers or helping the neighbor with whatever. And so by the time they were 8 or 9 or 10, they were out looking for work if they had some ambition. We're making that almost impossible because a child might get hurt mowing
labor,
a lawn.
Child labor laws actually kind of hurt people.
Well, they were intended to save lives, not to keep a child from getting a skinned knee.
Right. Well, and very beginning of child labor laws was just to make sure that the kid was getting paid for what he was doing and it wasn't terrible.
Well, that it wasn't, yeah, they were doing some job in a factory that could rip their limbs apart.
Right.
It was also anti-slavery. That a job had a certain
right.
value.
You had to have pay for the work that you were doing. But now it's gotten to where these kids that want to go out and get a job, I know a few kids that want to go out and get a job, they can't. They just can't do it.
Nobody dares hire them.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll cost you $15 an hour.
Or a lot of the teenagers that work in restaurants and stuff like that, they can go to work, but they have to be done by a certain time so that they can go home and get their homework done and get up and go to school the next day. So a lot of these employers can only hire so many teenagers because then they don't have any openers or closers because their hours are so limited.
Yeah, and they're seasonal, pretty right. much.
Okay, we are rambling. That's what we do here at the Ramble Room. So I want to kind of steer us back to where I wanted this discussion to go, because it was leading to another show that we're going to do later in the week. David Iverson of Cowboy State Politics is going to join us, and we're going to co-host Chip Nyman, John Baer, Mark Jennings, and Bo Beitman, three representatives and a state senator. And we're going to have a discussion about Medicaid expansion. And the purpose of that discussion is to talk about the financial aspects, why Medicaid expansion is a bad idea, and there are plenty of those. Stay tuned for that. But what I wanted to do is take a little step back, as I'm fond of saying, and look at this from a philosophical point of view of why Medicare or government health care is bad on itself. And it is rooted in the idea that if we cede responsibility for ourselves to the government, then we also cede with that a certain amount of liberty. Let me give you this scenario. We all like to go over to CESS in the summertime. And every year we have some sort of a project or family activity. And usually there's a certain amount of risk involved with those, which is what makes it fun. But let's just say, for example, we went over there and while we were working on something, or maybe we're playing a game of touch football, and the sheriff comes by, and he stops us all, and he says, that's against the health care orders. That is risky and dangerous. You have to cease and desist. We would consider that an affront to our liberty. We can do whatever we please. Well, if the government is paying for some single-payer health care thing, is paying for all of your health care, if you get injured, they're the ones that are stuck with the bill, then they would have a right to curtail it, or to even say in order to do that, you have to have a permit, you have to pay a fee, which is just another word for a fine.
Or if you get hurt, you get a fine.
Yeah, and all of these things, as Walter Williams pointed out in the beginning, just another way of making us slaves.
Right, because you are your own private property, your children are under your care, so you do try to be a little more careful with them, but I have a right to hurt myself.
a tradition.
Yeah, we don't play baseball anymore. Because we're afraid of getting hurt, it's just we're tired of it.
This is something that is not just theoretical, and it's not a conspiracy theory. We can watch this in other countries. Steven Crowder, on his show, talks a lot about how he grew up in Canada, and they have socialized healthcare there. And when you go in for a procedure, the government gets to decide whether or not you qualify for that and whether or not they're going to treat you. So where it used to be a free market kind of thing, I need some sort of treatment. I gave the doctor three chickens. He gave me what I needed, and it was an exchange that was beneficial to everybody. Now you go into the doctor and the doctor says, well, I'd love to treat you for this, except I see you're not up to date on your vaccinations and you've been eating entirely too much sugar. You're not up there on the list of someone who qualifies for this. And that's kind of a thing in like organ transplants, where if you're a heavy drinker or something, they're not going to give you a new liver because you haven't committed to not destroying it.
You're going to ruin the second one.
Yeah. And that kind of makes sense. You're getting part of someone else's body. That seems like a decent trade-off. Stop drinking and we'll give you a liver. But when it comes to me taking my children in for a doctor's appointment and they say, we see that your children haven't gotten all their vaccinations, we have to do something about this before we can give them this medication or this treatment or whatever. That's crossing a serious line, but we're not far off from that. Not to mention all of the financial issues of, because it's socialized, they don't have the funds to treat people properly. So there's a waiting list. And if you're not high enough up on the list, you don't get treatment.
And it's hard to find good doctors because, well, they're not being paid what they're getting paid here.
And they can't afford to accept three chickens from you because they have too much insurance to pay.
I love
malpractice. Chicken. They might be sued for malpractice. We actually participated in a socialist medical program when you were in the Army. Mm-hmm. Socialized medicine.
Ugh. One payer.
We were only in for 10 years, and only three of those was in a foreign country where there were no choices, because when we were in Colorado, you didn't necessarily have to go on the post to the post hospital and things like that. But when we were over there, the other day, Sarah was saying, I don't remember, I never went to the dentist when I was a little kid. And I said, well, you did one time, and here's how it happened. When all of the soldiers went to the Gulf, all of a sudden the dentist had time on their hands. So the wives and children could get into the dentist, and we all went once.
When everybody was in country, there were something like 30,000 people in the greater Stuttgart military community. And if you wanted a dentist appointment, you had to call on Tuesday between 9 and 10. You had a better shot to getting on Rush Limbaugh's show than you did of getting in and getting an appointment to go see the dentist. But I will remind you that when it came time for Sarah to be born, and we were still in Colorado Springs at Fort Carson, we delayed taking you to the doctor until we knew that all of the slots in the military hospital were filled up. They were going to have enough babies born in a certain period of time when she would be due that they didn't have room for us, and therefore we got a special right to go out on the economy, and you were born at Eisenhower Medical Center, I think they called it that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I still have the little t-shirt.
Isn't it sweet?
I did only cost $9.
$25.
Sorry.
You cost a lot more than that in other ways, but
of course,
initially.
But that was the reason we did that. We were just getting into the Army, and people were going, don't have the baby on post, don't have the baby on post. Okay, how do we do that? Well, you just don't go get care until it's too late to be scheduled. So here's already this manipulation of the system to keep from having to participate in the system. And I did. I had a good doctor, and in that hospital, I was the only one on the floor. But
no, you were in a bed. I remember I was there.
For the short time that I was there. But anyway, when we were actually in Stuttgart, if you had to go to the doctor, you couldn't get an appointment. What, like he said, whatever it was, you call in to make an appointment, and they said, okay, well, we can't do that today. You have to call on Tuesday, and there's this, sometimes it was a 15-minute window. You dial and dial and dial, and it was like 10 numbers or something like that. It was a long number that you just sat there and dialed. If it's busy, you hang up. You dial again. If it's busy, you hang up. And at 9:15, you might as well quit, because they're not going, even if you get through, they're not going to take an appointment for that thing.
Yeah, all of a sudden, at 9:15, it starts ringing, and nobody answers.
These phones were rotary dialed, too. It wasn't like push the buttons, and it was they had heavy springs on them, and the house was drafty, and your finger would freeze before you could get through the 10th digit.
It wasn't quite the, hello, operator. Well, I'm having a baby.
So you got to say, okay, this 15-minute window here, I got to get the kids all busy and keep them out of the room, because if I actually got through to somebody, I got to be ready, you know. But if you were actually sick, you went to the emergency room, because that was the only way to get access to care. If you went to the emergency room, you better have some snacks and a blanket with you, because you're going to sit there for 3 hours. Unless, perhaps, blood was dripping from you, you might have time.
And that goes back to, why are people begging or demanding that the government do this to them?
Right, but that was our experience, where from my ignorant 20s, after that, I knew better and would go, You don't want that. You don't want that.
The difference in care between what you would have gotten even in Fort Carson at the military hospital, which was probably 20 or 30 years behind in the way that they handled it, you were stepping way back. And at Eisenhower, where we did go, they had a birthing room, had a nice sofa in there. It had paintings on the walls. I was allowed to be in there. That was kind of a novelty. It was just entirely different, because Eisenhower had to compete on the free market. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they had some amenities that maybe somebody else didn't have.
They're trying to keep up with the latest developments.
The other thing that happens is every time government screws something up, the reaction of people is, well, the government's got to fix this.
No.
No, dummy, they're the ones that messed it up in the first place. And so here we are clamoring for this idea of expanding Medicaid, bankrupting an already bankrupt government, whether it be the state of Wyoming, whether it be the United States, much more so the latter than the former. At what end? What are we trying to accomplish?
What about the old people who can't afford medical care?
You know, why they can't afford it is because the government screwed everything up. So there we have a problem now, because right. We are where we are, and we can't just immediately go back and dump everybody out. Maybe just a sense of community, where you actually could go to a doctor and say, here are 45 chickens.
inflation. Yeah.
How about a sense of community where we take care of our own elderly people instead of expecting the government to pay them back?
Oh, right. I was going to say, let's go back 100 years again. Yeah. Who was doing it then?
Right. Well, we won't have a choice in that shortly, because we're in a kind of a position where this just can't go on the way that it is. If you have enjoyed what you've heard, you can find more of us on Podbean, rambleroom@podbean.com, Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We are about to release our website, which I'm really looking forward to. It'll be called crosscreekmedia.com. The Ramble Room will be there, and a news feed, and a number of other things. We're looking forward to growing and to being a better part of your community.